What they're missing in the movie is that in the book, you get the narrator's perspective constantly.
Yeah.
I mean, the opening line of the book. There was a boy called Eustace Clarence Scrub. And then the narrator adds, and he almost deserved it.
Welcome to Talking Beasts.
From NarniaWeb.com.
Where we explore the world of C.S. Lewis.
And keep a watchful eye
on the latest Narnia movie news.
This
is Talking Beasts.
Hey everyone, welcome back. I'm Jim Fan.
And I'm Glum Puddle.
And today we are talking about Eustace Scrub. Dun dun dun.
And he almost deserved it.
And he almost deserved it. And in particular, we're talking about Will Poulter's interpretation of the character in Walden Media's Voyage of the Dawn Treader film. And just kind of discussing if we feel that Will's interpretation of the character of Eustace was true to the book. Did we like it? Did we not like it? General thoughts about the character of Eustace and how it has been brought to film in the past. Just kind of generally talking about Eustace. And Eustace is my favorite character in the Narnia series. So I always enjoy a chance to talk about it. And yeah, I have thoughts and I know you have thoughts too.
Yeah, I do want to give our listeners a chance to go get their Rotten Tomatoes ready. Because yes. I've talked about it a little bit before, but I will disclose some unpopular opinions regarding Eustace in this. So
yes, and we'll discuss whether they're justified or not.
Sorry, by the time you've heard this, we recorded this a few weeks before. We're not going to post this for another few weeks, so it's already happened. I'm gone. I packed up. I might even have a new baby at this point by the time this episode gets posted.
Wow.
So, sorry. I moved on.
And you'll try to come after him with your pitchforks, but it's just not going to
It's
not going to do anything to him.
Send me a nasty email with a tomato in it, and I just might see it.
And he'll just reply to everything with, "It doesn't matter because I have a baby now."
Yeah, I'll have nastier things than Rotten Tomatoes in my life at that point. So,
all right.
Anyway, speaking of nasty things, Eustace.
Oh, yes, Eustace. Well, that is a love to hate character, especially at the beginning. He changes a lot over the course of Dawn Treader, and then he's in two other books, Silver Chair and Last Battle, where I think his character also changes a lot as well. But today in particular, we're talking about Dawn Treader. And especially we're talking about Will Poulter's performance and if we feel like it made sense with the character in the book. Like, did they jive? Are they the same? Are they similar? Are they not at all?
That giant rat thing just tried to claw my face off!
I was merely trying to expel the water from your lungs, sir.
It's all... Did anyone just hear that? He just talked!
He always talks.
But I don't know what kind of prank this is, but I want to wake up right now!
Perhaps we could throw him back.
Chloroformed and kidnapped by some sort of seafaring carnival. I demand to know just where in the blazes am I?
You're on the Dawn Treader, the finest ship in Narnia's navy.
It's funny, I was thinking about, why do people like Eustace? And I suspect, and of course, he's your favorite character, maybe you can tell me. But I would say that it's in equal measure the people that remember Eustace from the book as, oh, I love to hate that character. And there's probably just as many people who, they just remember the transformation.
Yeah.
He's memorable, the dragoning and undragoning, and that's what they remember about Eustace. So I'd say it's probably 50-50, those things.
And then also the aspect that, out of all characters in the Narnia series, Eustace can be one of the more quote-unquote comedic characters in that he has some moments. I just think some of the writing for him in the book, it's just kind of witty. Like, I enjoy it a lot. That's one reason why I enjoy the character.
Yeah, maybe I'll get into that. I think a lot of the wittiness comes from the narrator's perspective on Eustace. Maybe more than Eustace himself. It's both, but that's kind of what stands out to me.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we'll get into that. But in preparing for this podcast, we posted a poll on the Talking Beasts Facebook group just asking people, what did you think about Will Poulter's performance? Do you feel like it was, did you like it, first of all, or not, or did you not like it? Did you feel like it was true to the book, or did you feel like it was not true to the book? And in the poll, now, granted, this wasn't it's not a huge poll, so there's, room for small sample size errors in there. No one said they didn't like Will's interpretation, but quite a few people did say that they didn't feel like it was true to the book. I would say the overwhelming majority felt like it was true to the book, but there was a handful that said that they didn't feel like it was quite true to the character in the book.
Interesting.
Yes, which I also thought was interesting because honestly, like until I kind of started thinking about this in more depth, I hadn't really considered, do I feel like the character of Eustace in the film is accurate to the character in the book? Like, I hadn't really thought about that quite so much. There was a couple comments that I wanted to share because I thought they kind of pointed out some good things that helped me to think. And I think maybe you can probably speak into this as well, Glumpuddle.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan Paravel said, I think Will Poulter definitely made a personality for Eustace that was different from his personality in the book. And then Jonathan said, he played it for laughs at times, which the book didn't do in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
His mannerisms, etc., seemed different than I imagined. Which I thought was really interesting because it was I thought the point of acknowledging that he was playing it for laughs caused me to think. And then I kind of spun off on a rabbit trail, which I can go into in a little bit.
Okay.
And then Samuel A. Montgomery said, I think Will Poulter's performance was true to the book. The material that he was given, however, was not. And I thought that was also very insightful.
Yeah, some of that caught me by surprise. I guess the number of people that maybe there won't be as many tomatoes thrown at me as I thought. Because for a long time, I think that I went to see the movie with high expectations for Will Poulter and walked away feeling like he was okay, I guess. And everyone on NarniWeb when I got back is just gushing over him. So I tended to kind of people, well, wasn't Will Poulter great? To be like, yeah, he was. It was good. I didn't want to talk about it though too much because I was just like, everyone else is loving him, and if I say I just thought Will Poulter was okay, no one will take my negative review of Dawn Treader seriously at all. They'll just say, well, you just don't like anything if you don't like Will Poulter. And I do like Will Poulter. I just don't think he was fantastic. So Jonathan Paravel was sort of saying that Will Poulter was playing it for laughs. And initially, my reaction is, well, of course, Eustace in the book is funny. Like, you're kind of rolling your eyes at him, and it's funny. But I wonder if maybe what Jonathan Paravel is getting at there is that Eustace in the movie, I think, comes across as a very, almost like a cartoon character.
Mm.
He's so heightened. And I think maybe that's the way, the basic challenge of Eustace, you know, is how do you want to see this character? How do you want him to be on screen even though you don't like him? Because that's what it is in the book. I want to keep reading about him. I enjoy reading about him, his warped, extremely narcissistic perspective on life. But I know this is not a good character. I don't like him. That's the basic challenge. And I think Will Poulter's approach was to let's play up the comedy and say, this isn't really a real person. We can laugh at this cartoon character. And by making him feel a little less real and more over the top and hammed up, it's easier. It softens the blow a bit. And maybe they were worried if he seems too real and grounded, then it's going to be extra annoying. And so I wonder if that's kind of the subtle distinction that Jonathan Paravel is making there.
Yeah. I think that this was something that I hadn't really considered in the past, but once I kind of read some comments and I kind of dug into it a little bit more and I thought about it, I began to see that I think there is a distinct choice being made by Will and the writers to emphasize the, quote, comedic aspect of the character.
Yeah, I can see that.
I think that it was intentional.
Oh, yeah.
Will Poulter, he made a name for himself as a child in comedy. So he was known for being a comedic actor.
Son of Rambo.
Yes. And then he was also in, I think it was, or there was some show called School of Comedy. Like, it literally is a comedy show. that is how he got noticed. That is how he was getting attention from casting directors, producers, etc. So it makes you think, okay, when the writers are sitting down, they're deciding what direction they want this character to go. And if they want it to be, like, I don't think they found Will and then decided to kind of build the character, like their interpretation of the character around him. I think they had that kind of already in mind.
Sure.
And then they went out to find a boy who could do that. And getting someone with a comedic background would be that person.
Clearly, I recognize the book character and what they did, obviously. I can see that they're using the book as kind of their starting point.
Right.
I just think there was a tendency to, in the execution of it, to push the comedy side, maybe so that you're not as annoyed by him because you're just laughing at him. But I will say that, yeah, I recognize this is not a different character. I recognize the same character from the book. It's not hugely different or anything.
Yeah. I liked Will as Eustace. I thought he was a great Eustace. Now, do I think it was perfect? No. Because there, honestly, like, let's be honest, there are so many things that were wrong with the film in general that nothing could really be completely on point and perfect from it. Uh-huh. And I think, you know, we talk about like the general writing and the general like direction they decided to take the film in that influenced the characters in and of themselves. Mm-hmm. We talk about how the character of Peter in Walden Media's Prince Caspian.
Oh, yeah.
Right. We're like, oh, that's like not Peter. Like, does that mean that William Moseley was a bad Peter? No, it means he was doing the character of Peter as was needed for the overall story that they were writing. Doesn't mean he was a bad Peter. It just means he had to, you know, he had to do what the writers were going for.
As far as, you know, doing the postmortem and saying where does the blame lie, if you will, if there's a problem. And like, yeah, if we're talking about Will Poulter, there's Will Poulter, the actor. Then there's the material he's given. Then there's the way he's directed. There's all these different aspects to it.
Right. Yeah.
And then, with Peter, he was interpreting the character he saw in the screenplay. And I still think he could have done a little better and it's a big ask. It's a similar situation, I guess. And if I assume what they wanted with Peter and Prince Caspian was to know that, oh, this character is got problems. He's relying too much on himself rather than he really should be trusting in us and trusting in others. But to be aware of that, but to empathize with him at the same time and go on this journey with him. I think many Narnia Webbers would agree they largely failed in that. And you do just go, gosh, why can't this guy just lighten up? And you're not going on that journey with him.
Yeah.
With Eustace, I was trying to think, how do I express that I don't quite think the execution of Eustace ultimately got to the same place as it is in the book. How do I describe that? What is it that's majorly different? I couldn't come up with much, but what they're missing in the movie is that in the book, you get the narrator's perspective constantly. I mean, the opening line of the book, there was a boy called Eustace Clarence Scrub, and then the narrator adds, and he almost deserved it.
Right.
From the very first sentence, the narrator is saying, can you believe this guy? And then there's a bit where, you know, Eustace is crying as he gets on board the Dawn Treader, and the narrator says something like, and Eustace was crying far more than a boy his age has the right to cry when nothing more than a wedding has happened to him. And there's little things like that throughout the book where it's the narrator is just, you're seeing everything through this narrator's lens, and he's right there with you. He's ahead of you. Like, can you believe this guy? And of course, in a movie, you don't quite get that because we don't have the narrator. We don't have the perspective on Eustace. At least you can't have that kind of objective perspective, at least to the extent that you have that subjective perspective that you can get in a book. And so that's just something that's gonna happen as a result of taking it from a book into a movie.
And so what you have to go off of are like the people's reactions around him. Like, how are they reacting to him? Are they reacting like, oh my gosh, like what's up with this guy? Or are they annoyed? Are they amused? Are they just whatever? That is what has to influence how you feel about him.
You're right. Rather than have the narrator's reactions, you have to rely on the other characters' reactions to see, yes, for the movie to tell you, yes, we know this guy is supposed to be just horrible. And maybe it was the fact that I didn't really connect with the characters in the movie. And so I didn't go on that journey with them. I didn't care what they were thinking. I felt very much the Dawn Treader just removed and I was watching it happen. Now, maybe the people that just loved Eustace in Dawn Treader, maybe the real thing is that they connected with Edmund and Lucy and Caspian in the movie. And so that when they're feeling annoyed by Eustace and rolling their eyes at Eustace, they're like, yes, I'm right there with you. So maybe that's the actual thing that determines if you like Eustace or not. Me, I felt no connection to the characters in the movie. So maybe that was one reason why I thought Will Poulter, who's a very good actor, and I thought was delivered a fairly memorable performance, but it's not like the book where I just want to keep on reading about Eustace. Oh, go back to Eustace. And I love that we get to read his journal. I have several pages of his journal. I love it.
Yeah.
And in the movie, I was remembering when the early reviews of Dawn Treader came out and there were a lot of people saying, wow, Will Poulter's Eustace is just so irritating. You just want to punch him. And a lot of Narnia Webbers were going, well, great. That's exactly the way it's supposed to be. It sounds like they nailed Eustace. And I don't think that. I think that And I may have been one of those people at the time. But now I look back on it now as it really sounds like they were saying, get off the screen, get off the screen. I don't want to see this anymore. This is really annoying. And in the book, that's not what I do. I still enjoy reading about this character and experiencing this character, even though I know he's definitely not somebody I would want to have dinner with. And so that's the really tricky distinction. That's why it's so hard to get Eustace right, especially doing it as a movie where you don't have that narrator there to see it through their perspective.
There was another comment in the Facebook group by Cody Quenbeck, who said, here's a quote from a movie review which reflects why I like the performance in the movie. And the quote is, many child actors play jerks like they know they're supposed to be jerks, but Poulter plays the role with gusto and convinces you that he believes he's in the right.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was interesting because in the movie, I see the intention with this. I don't think it quite comes across as strongly as it could. But that is one thing about the character of Eustace, which is supposed to keep him from being like someone that you hate instead of someone that you love to hate. The difference is he's not like inherently a really obnoxious, annoying. I mean, he is. But he's not doing it to be obnoxious and annoying.
Mm-hmm.
He is the way he is because his perspective, his worldview is so tiny. Like, he lives in this little echo chamber where everyone around him is confirming everything that he says and tell him that he's completely right and everything. So when he comes across that's different, he just immediately dismisses it. Like, he just can't even begin to think that there might be something else out there that is completely contrary to what he believes to be real. Like, he just can't even comprehend it.
Yeah, dropping a character like that who can barely see past his own front door and dropping a character like that to go explore beyond the world's end.
Yeah.
And realizing everyone on that ship is realizing, wow, there is so much more to the world than I knew.
Yeah.
And Eustace in particular is like, there's more out there than outside my front door, and there's more to life than just me. For him in particular, it's this mind-blowing experience.
So basically, like, what it comes down to is he's not being obnoxious to be obnoxious. He is obnoxious because he believes so strongly. He's so convinced that he's right and everyone else is just completely off their rocker. And he's got no subtlety. He's got no perspective. He's got no, you know, way, but like, be diplomatic. Like, it's just everything is black and white.
He's in a bubble. Yeah.
So you find him extremely annoying, but you also, in a way, you empathize because you're like, I kind of know.
Yeah. The way Lewis sets up the character is like, yeah, that this character has no other way to have. I mean, like, he's just in, like you said, he's in his own little feedback loop, and he's got no way out. It's going to take some kind of force from the outside to change him.
And of course, it does take, you know, some character growth to help him get where he needs to be. Like, it's not a transformation that happens right away.
Oh, he has to turn into a dragon.
You know, he has to literally turn into a dragon to finally kind of get it in his, you know, that's a process for him.
Yeah. I also think that early in the story, in the book, it's hinted that Eustace has this insecurity. Like, there's the bit where, I think it comes up a couple times, but one that comes to mind is early on, you know, he hears Edmund and Lucy talking about Narnia and he thinks they're making it up. And Lewis writes something like, you know, Eustace didn't approve, since he wasn't capable of being creative himself, he did not approve of anybody else being creative. And so I think there is, underneath this, there is some jealousy and some insecurity.
Yes, absolutely.
Where a lot of this is coming from. So like you said, it's not just being obnoxious for the sake of being obnoxious. And that's the real feedback loop, I guess, is that he's not capable of really empathizing and relating to another human being. And so he's just trying to be, this is the only way he can relate to people, is to annoy them, basically. It's this endless feedback loop, and it's going to take an outside force, like being turned into a dragon, Aslan having to come along and rip that dragon skin off, because there's no way that metaphorical dragon skin is going to come off unless that happens. And that's why it's so satisfying to see that transformation occur.
So I think that when we talk about like the difference between the book character and the film character, I think the disconnect lies in not quite being able to really grasp like the subtlety of that, where he is so obnoxious, but you know that it's because he really, really, really genuinely believes that he is doing the right thing and he's completely in the right. And like, I think the subtlety is not there. If there was, and I think that lies more with the writing than anything else.
Maybe I think it's both. I think Will Poulter did make a conscious decision, or was directed or whatever, to really ham it up and play Eustace almost as a cartoon character and take it to level 11. And I think that was their approach to making Eustace not quite so annoying, is, well, let's just make him ridiculously funny. Whereas in the book, Eustace is still somewhat humanly knowable. Like, there's that insecurity I talked about before. He's not quite a cartoon character.
Yeah.
And Lewis utilized narration to kind of soften the blow of him being annoying and say, yes, I know he's annoying. I can't believe it either. And I'm the one writing the book.
And honestly, like, there's so many things that I regret about the Don Treader film. Like, there's so many things, so many regretful missed opportunities.
And if you're listening to this and you like the Don Treader movie, thank you for listening. Please post a comment. Obviously, both of us envy you. We wish we liked the Don Treader movie as much as you. No, I'm serious.
Yes.
I'm so glad you enjoyed it. And I would love to get your perspective in the comments. So please post a comment. Anyway, you were saying.
I was saying that one thing that I really wish could have happened, but did not happen because the film just was not a good film, and so they never continued after that. Like, there was no silver chair, there was no last battle.
Mm-hmm.
I would have really loved to see how Will Poulter could have taken the character and grown him, you know, once they were past that.
Yeah,
he's the comedic relief of the film in a way. They would have gotten past that, and you get to silver chair where he's, you know, he has his moments, but he's not the same person at all.
Yeah.
I would have really liked to see him do that, because there was little bits at the end.
Yeah.
You know, when he's been undragoned and he's not the same anymore. I really liked that.
That very last scene in the movie when he's hanging up the picture.
Yeah, I would have loved to see that continue.
It is kind of satisfying, and Will Poulter does make it kind of believable. That is one of the things in the movie that does kind of work, is you are just relieved. Not just relieved that the old Eustace is gone, but it's somewhat, it is believable the way that Will Poulter plays it. And he's saying some not great dialogue, like, oh, I'm sorry for being such a sod, he says when he's in the boat, which I think is a pretty lame line, and he makes it believable. But to your point about, yeah, it would have been great, especially a great actor like Will Poulter, what would he have developed Eustace into in The Silver Chair, for example?
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to think of examples of characters that are annoying or flawed, but we like him anyway. And actually, I'd say that Han Solo came to mind. In the original Star Wars, he's cocky, he's arrogant, he just cares about money, and we love him for it at the same time. At the same time, it is still satisfying to see him change at the end of that movie. And that's great. Act 1, Act 2, Act 3, it told a little complete story. Then in the sequels, I think they really had a hard time finding room for Han Solo to develop. And a lot of it was around, this is one of the reasons why Harrison Ford wanted to kill off Han Solo. Or that's what he suggested, at least, is that it's like, well, where else do we go with this character? We're just kind of, he sort of did pretty much exactly the same thing again in Empire Strikes Back, where it's, he does this very self-sacrificial thing at the end of that, where he gets frozen in the carbonite. Sorry for the spoilers. So we just sort of kind of did the same thing with Han Solo again. Then you get to the third one, there's no room for him to develop after that at all. So it's sort of like, wow, it was as satisfying as it was to see that character change. I miss the old Han Solo when he was flawed. And I don't think that's the case with Eustace. I think that it's so satisfying to see that undragoning transformation, because it's so powerful and so real. And Eustace is very humanly knowable at that point, because of the amount of time the book has spent in his head, and says, oh, and poor Eustace realized he's been a nuisance all along. And I don't have to recite any of that to listeners of this podcast. It's one of the most memorable things in all the Chronicles of Narnia, is Eustace's time spent as a dragon.
Yeah.
We're so happy to see him transformed, and he gets to do things like actually do something selfless when he grabs Caspian's second best sword and tries to beat the sea serpent. And whenever he's talking and not being such a sod in the book, it's really satisfying. And I think in later books as well, and they even make a point of it. In The Silver Chair, Lewis makes a big deal about how different Eustace is, and everyone's remarking about it. So I don't think they have the Han Solo problem in the book. It's great that we're happy to see him changed, and I like who he becomes in the later books. And I think a good actor like Will Poulter really could have done something with that. But there may be another opportunity with another actor in Netflix. We'll see.
For sure. I think the character of Eustace in the books is so great. You don't have to do a ton to make it work. It definitely, you know, takes a good actor. Mm-hmm. But it's just written so well that I really look forward to seeing, you know, future characterizations of Eustace, because I think it's a great character, and I think it's really, really fun to see it done well on screen. So
it's great when we see people change in movies, and it's unbelievably Eustace seems like someone who could never change early on. And of course, it takes getting turned into a dragon. And it takes magical line and all these things to do it. But I think as cheesy as this is to say, we've all got our dragon skins that we want to rip off. We've all got our flaws deep down that we're hoping that no one else knows about.
Yeah.
What's that thing called? Imposter syndrome, where we think that everyone else has it together and we don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm about to be a dad and I'm kind of dealing with that right now. We're like, wow, all my friends have figured out this parenting thing and they're experts and I'm the only one that hasn't figured it out. Wow, I sure hope they don't realize how worried I am about changing diapers and how worried I am about, am I going to be able to be a good dad? Because they sure seem to have it together.
And spoiler alert, no one has it together.
Exactly. We've all got our dragon skins and things that, oh, how could I ever change, that we would like to take off. And it's encouraging to see Lewis do it in such a believable way. And we all want that to be the case. We've all got our dragon skins. We want to believe they could be taken off. And it's satisfying to see that done in a believable way.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes the Eustace as a character worthwhile, yeah. I think. And it's done in a way that it doesn't sell out. Like when he's undragoned, it's painful and it's difficult, but completely worth it. Kind of echoing some characters in The Great Divorce I was thinking of, who have to have this transformation, but it's painful. It's a process. And so this is something I think, whether they know it or not, our world wants right now. It's what makes it worthwhile doing Eustace again, basically.
Yeah, for sure.
I was thinking, what would I tell Netflix they could do better? Like, we're going to have a second go at Eustace. And I would say, hint early on that he wishes he could change, but he just does not believe he ever could.
Mm-hmm.
And he's completely given up hope in that. And then, of course, he wallows in that as a dragon, and then it's satisfying when he finally gets out of it. So that would be my one piece of advice, is resist. I think Will Poulter is a great actor, but I just think that overall, with the direction, Walden Media kind of took the easy way out and just made him comedic and funny.
Yeah.
And a punchline. And I think that Lewis doesn't resort to that. He still has Eustace is still a humanly knowable person. He still has a reality to him, even when we're rolling our eyes at him.
Yes.
That'd be my main suggestion for Netflix if they do Eustace again.
Go for the subtlety of the character. It's very easy to make him like a satire, you know, it's very to make him super black and white, but no, like there's depth to the character, and the source material has so much depth to it, so it's not like you have to invent it. So it's there. You just need to find, you know, creative team, so the director, the writer, and the actor, who can come together and bring that to life, and it's amazing. So yeah,
I agree. I just want to say one more time that I think Will Poulter was a good actor, and what he was doing with that character was memorable and in certain ways fun to watch, but it's a very, very challenging character. And in some ways, I don't think he was completely successful when you compare it to the book or maybe even what the movie needed, but he did take a very challenging character and I think did a pretty good job with it, even if it didn't capture every aspect of what I think is in the book.
It's kind of, it reminded me a bit of the character of Reba Cheap and how I think that's a hard character to get right, because it's very easy to kind of, again, turn it into just straight up doing it for laughs.
Like, yeah.
You're like, man, this character is kind of ridiculous, and you laugh at him, but you don't really understand him.
Yeah.
So that the point when, like, you know, he's saying goodbye at the end of Dawn Treader, you know, never to be seen again, and, you know, Lucy's crying, and everyone's really sad to see him go, and you're like, why?
Exactly.
If that happens, that's a massive red flag saying that you did not get the full depth of this character correct. So I think it can, in the same way, like Eustace can be the same. You have to be careful. You have to make sure you're subtle with it.
And Reba Cheap is something, by the way, again, that could very easily be, just like Eustace, a very one-dimensional thing. Oh, he's a mouse, but he's always saying super obnoxiously reckless and brave things. And that's it. And that's kind of all Reba Cheap is in Prince Caspian, because he's just a side character. And then I feel like in Dawn Treader in particular, Lewis develops it into something that this feels more like a real person.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it. It's like his recklessness is not, it stops being annoying because I believe it. Again, sort of, even though he's not a human, he's sort of humanly knowable. It's a similar challenge with Eustace.
Those of you who are listening to this podcast, leave us a comment. Let us know, like, what do you think? What did we miss, first of all? Because I know we probably didn't cover everything.
Yeah.
But what do you feel about Will Poulter's interpretation of the character? Any thoughts, comments, hate mail, slash?
What would you suggest to the Netflix filmmakers? If you could say, well, if they were asking you, well, what could we do better? You know, what would you, if they're doing Eustace again, what would you tell them to keep in mind as a fan of the book?
I think that wraps up the main portion of the podcast for today. But Glumpuddle, it is your turn to be stumped.
Hit me.
All right. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Are you sure?
I'm about 86.7% sure.
Okay, good. That's pretty high, actually. All right. So today's question was submitted by Grace. And the question is, which king of Narnia brought the Lone Islands under Narnian rule? And how?
Okay, Caspian wonders about this in the Dawn Treader book. And he says something about, did Peter the High King conquer them? And Edmund says, oh no, they belonged to Narnia long before our day. So I think it's the last battle where Jewel and Jill or someone are talking, and they say the name of the king. I'm just going to look deep into my brain right now and try to get it. Obviously, it wasn't Frank.
No. I will tell you that.
Going back too far. I feel like I can see it in my head, but not enough to say it. So I will go ahead and blow Queen Susan's horn.
So the official hint is one that you already know, actually, as told to Jill by Jewel in Chapter 8 of The Last Battle. So I'm going to give you a bonus. I'm going to give you a bonus hint that I just thought of right now.
Since I already knew that, okay.
This will help you with part of the question. The name of the king appears in the films. I won't tell you where or why, and it's not in context. It's just there.
Okay. Just in the film somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Not in context.
Like in the it's not the name of an actor or anything? It's actually spoken in the films?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm trying to think of names of characters.
Also, do you think you might know the how? Not just the name, but the how.
I don't think I'll know that one, no.
Okay.
If I had a lifeline, I could look it up in the book. I'm pretty sure I could find it, but I can't, so I think I'll have to declare myself stumped.
All right.
I do remember that Jill and Jewel do talk about this in the last battle. That's all I got.
All right. I will give you the answer.
Go for it.
So the answer is, the name of the king is King Gale. He is the ninth descendant. He's the ninth descendant from King Frank.
Gale! But that's not fair, because isn't it spelled differently?
I didn't say it was completely correct, and I did say it was not in context. I just said it was there.
Okay.
And the how is King Gale, he was the ninth descendant from King Frank and saved the Lone Islanders from a dragon. And as a token
that's
of things,
right.
They gave themselves to be under Narnia's jurisdiction forever. So you were, I think you get bonus in that you knew Susan's hint. You already knew the hint from blowing Susan's horn.
I'll take pity points, whatever I can.
You
can
take that. But I saw the answer and I was like, oh, this is too good to pass up.
Oh, great story. So yeah, for those of you that don't know, during the production of Voyage of the Dawn Treader, we got a lot of spy videos from the set and we started noticing this mysterious little girl that would pop up every now and then. Of course, was Gale. And at first we're like, is this like the daughter of one of the producers or something? And then she kept popping up. So, but then, oh no, I guess she's in the movie. So we started calling her the MLG, the mysterious little girl. Then we found out the character's name was Gale. We called her Mysterious Little Gale. I would not have gotten that one. But yeah, now that you say it, I can see it in my brain. Thank you, Grace, for the question, and I hope you'll give me some grace for not getting it. All right, want me to take the outro?
Yes, you go ahead and send us out.
All right, you've been listening to Talking Beast, the Narnia podcast from NarniaWeb.com. If you've enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe and give us 5 stars on iTunes. Post a comment below or in the Talking Beast Facebook group. Visit patreon.com/NarniaWeb to support this podcast and get exclusive content, including early access to episodes. You can also email us at podcast@NarniaWeb.com, jimfan15@NarniaWeb.com, or glumpuddle@NarniaWeb.com. Special thanks for AJ Aiken for editing this podcast. We will be back on May 17th. Until next time, further up and further in.